We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
There he is, Elliot Friedman, joining us here on The Instigators. What's up, Ellie? I was just talking about, I didn't know until I read your 31 thoughts that Ryan Mittler was requested by Elton John for a visit. Did they meet?
I don't know. I just know they told me that it happened, that when Elton John, because Elton John, I went back and I checked the dates to make sure it was true. He came in March 2010, right after the Olympics, and he asked about Ryan Mittler.
No kidding. How'd you find that out? How'd you know that?
I did a piece on Mittler, and somebody told me that.
Huh. All right. Well, Elliot's here, so we're not going to waste time talking about Ryan Mittler. We can do that any day, and he's going to join us at some point. He told me that. But, Elliot, what happened
last night? Are we on the air right now?
Yeah, we are.
Oh, okay, good thing I didn't swear. I didn't realize I was coming right on the air.
Oh, you didn't know that you were late?
No. Well, I knew I was late, but I didn't know I came right up on live.
You take a week off.
Yeah.
Then you request another week.
Yeah.
And then you're late. So
we will keep you accountable, Elliot.
I got no problem with that. Like you reap what you sow, right? So I got no problem with that.
Well, speaking of reap what you sow, is that kind of what happened last night in New York with the Rangers? And how could all of this have been prevented, if at all?
You know, I think there's two different conversations here. Number one is, you know, if Wilson had been suspended, it's probably a lot calmer. But, you know, you guys played. And I think also, too, the Rangers were basically called a bunch of wimps. And, you know, like if you listen to Brendan Smith in the postgame last night, somebody asked him, you know, did you guys do this because people said you were soft, basically? And he goes, do you think we're soft? And, you know, the reporter's like, no. And he goes, well, there you go. But, you know, the Rangers had to know as players that they were being challenged. They were being told they were basically wimps. And I don't care who you are. If you get enough of that for 48 hours, you're going to lash out. You're going to show that you can defend yourself. So I think there were two issues here. I think there was one that Wilson wasn't suspended. And I think the second issue was that those players felt like basically their toughness was called into question.
Does the league like it? Oh, go ahead, Riff.
You think for these guys to do, because the guys that were fighting on the ice are not fighters. So this is out of their comfort zone. Mm-hmm. And yes, they were essentially called soft. And there was something that they wanted to prove. They wanted to prove to the Washington Capitals, Tom Wilson, the league, the media members that are calling them soft, that we will
stay. They're fans, Craig.
They're fans. Yes. Yeah. Everyone. Mm-hmm.
I do. I that's why, like I said, I think there were two things here. It was, they were frustrated that Wilson didn't get a suspension, and they were frustrated because they were basically called, they were called soft, and they wanted to show that they could stand up for themselves.
Do you buy that the removal of John Davison and Jeff Gordon were not related to the media address?
Yes. Initially I didn't, but the more people I spoke to, you know, as we do this right now, Glenn Sather and Chris Drury are doing a Zoom call with the media. And I do think that we're not used to impulsive James Dolan in the NHL, right? if you're a Knicks fan, you're very used to that. This is a guy who gave Larry Brown like something like $50 million and fired him after a year. That's the way he runs the Knicks. He's very impulsive. He's very reactionary. And somehow over the last month, he got it in his head that the Rangers were not far along as they needed to be, that the team should and could be a lot better. And he did, and I think he pushed for the, them to accelerate the rebuild. I think John Davidson and Jeff Gorton said, no, we don't need to do that. We're going the right way. And I think this was happening regardless of what happened from Monday night to Tuesday night. Now,
so it just, do I it think, just made do I his think, job easier.
Yeah, you know,
easier.
Do I think that they now maybe it accelerated the timing, Craig?
Yeah.
But I don't think it meant anything different. Now, do I think that they agreed with the statement? No, I don't think Gorton or Davidson had any interest in seeing that statement go out, nor did they agree with it. But this firing was coming regardless.
So Elliot Friedman joining us here on the Instigators as he, well, as he normally has been doing, but he took a couple weeks off. But Thursdays at 11 o'clock, Sportsnet Hockey Insider up in Canada. And Elliot, we talked a lot and I asked you on the air, could you ever see Jack Eichel moving on from the Sabres or the Sabres moving on? And the Rangers were a team that was discussed in those conversations. Do you think this move changes the Rangers' approach toward that, or would that not have any effect, do you think? What do you think their direction is going to be?
I think they're going to be aggressive. You know, the Rangers have some contracts they have to do, some big ones in the next couple of years. Adam Fox will be one. Zibanejad will be another. But, you know, obviously I think that one of the things that happened here is that Gorton and Davidson, like I said, they preached patience and going at this is a bit of a slower route. And I don't think that Sather in particular agreed with that. But, you know, we've already said that we do think that the Rangers have interest in Eichel, that they're a team that would, that has made offers in the past, that has been interested in the past. I don't think this would change anything. I think if Eichel was available, I think the Rangers would still be interested, as would a lot of other teams, but I think they definitely would be.
Do you have any further updates on his health or anything of the sort? I mean, there was some conversation about surgery versus rehab and where he might be at.
I think right now the Sabres and Eichel are working their way through that as to what the process is going to be. I do know, like it was said, he wants to do it as fast as possible so he can be ready for the start of next year. But I know that they're working together, or they're discussing what they want the process to be exactly, who to have it and what to be done.
So is that just the collective both sides trying to come to, you know, who's going to do the surgery, when you're going to do the surgery, or mm-hmm. if you need the surgery, if we wait long enough, will this help the healing process? Are they just kind of taking this, you know, step by step, trying to figure out what's the you know, if he does
the proper route, yeah,
where he's going to have it and who's going to do it?
Yes, that kind of thing. Yes.
So I'm reading here, I've been reading a lot about Bob Hartley lately, and the Sabres have they obviously still have Don Granato, but there's going to be a coaching search. Have you heard about coaches that maybe they've interviewed, if they have been interviewing? Is Don Granato a front runner, and is Bob Hartley coming back to the NHL?
Bob Hartley, we spoke to him yesterday. We taped a podcast with him, and he was really good. You know, I think that Bob Hartley, like, I think if you're a competitor, and he clearly is, you want to show that you can still do it. Like he said, yes, he would like to come back, but in the right situation. I think it's a combination of both trying to say the right things and also trying to say, look, I'm a competitor and I want to come back and show that I can still coach and he can coach. Wow. There's no question about it.
He likes his physical teams too, doesn't he?
Yes, he does. Yes.
He's darn near won everything. I was looking at
he has.
He just won
KHL Gagarin Cup.
The Garland Cup, which is Petey and I saw it the other day. What a fantastic looking cup.
Yes, looks good.
He won the Swiss League championship. He's won the Calder Cup, which is the American League. He won a Stanley Cup with Colorado, if I'm not mistaken, and also won a Memorial Cup in the Quebec Major Junior. And I mean, this guy's won everywhere he's gone.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how many teams out there, if he's available, are going to be interested in a guy like him?
You know, I think he's available. There's no question about that. Look, I wouldn't be surprised if some people call him. Absolutely. I wouldn't be surprised about that at all. The thing about Hartley is I think he's both. I think he's both compassionate. You know, he talks in our interview a lot about Dan Snyder, and man, it's some of it is very hard to listen to, but I know guys who played for that team when after Snyder's accident, and they said that Hartley basically saved that team. The job he did there was unbelievable, really, they said. But also, he can be very demanding and very blunt. And so he's got a lot of a wide range there of things he can do. I think he'd love to coach in the NHL again, even if he won't come right out and say it.
So let me ask you this. You know, he's been around for a while. He's coached in a lot of different leagues, had tremendous, tremendous amount of success. Mm-hmm. Has already won a Stanley Cup in the NHL. Yep. What, and I don't know him,
mm-hmm.
what type of coach is he? Is he a, you know, is he a coach that is better off coaching a younger team to galvanize and build that team? Or mm-hmm. is he better off taking a team that is already established, but they just need a kick in the pants to try and get over the hop to win?
Well, I don't know if it's I would say better, but there was one thing he said in the interview I thought was really interesting, Craig, and that is that, you know, he called Ilya Kovalchuk. Kovalchuk didn't have an NHL job. And don't forget that Hartley had Kovalchuk in Atlanta, and they know each other very well. He called Ilya Kovalchuk and said, Ilya, you're not getting a job in the NHL this year. Come here and show me you can play, and I can, and show everybody you can still play, and, you know, basically do this for your resume. And he said that Kovalchuk did that, and he said that he was great with him for the younger players. Now, I know in Calgary, and Hartley said in the interview, made a passing comment that he didn't like the way it ended in Calgary. And one of the issues there I heard was that, you know, his bluntness, some of the younger guys couldn't handle it. And, you know, Craig, so what I think is, what that says to me is he needs veterans who he can kind of use to help him with the young players. So, like, but the thing is, like, I look at Buffalo right now and the way you guys are playing, and I have to tell you, I talked to the Michael Hauser's family this week, and they were so proud, not only of their son, but how the Sabres played in front of them in that first game when you guys fell down 2-0.
Yeah.
And, you know, you, like, I was watching that game. You guys are watching that game. How many of us thought that game was going to end up 15-0 when the Islanders took that lead? Like, we all did, didn't we?
And I asked him that yesterday. We had him on the show, and I asked him, I asked him that because I was so nervous for him.
Yeah.
I mean, I was sitting there feeling the nerves. I mean, I'm sitting there thinking to myself, like, man, after the first one, the second one, you know, what are you thinking? You know what I mean? Like, it's gotta be tough for a guy in that situation.
So what that says to me is that you guys, whatever happened before, like, that's a high character group to me, that they're looking at this guy here who's playing his first NHL game after 9 years as a pro. We're down 2-0. And not only did you guys win, but you guys carried the play against a really good team. Like, that says to me that you have there's something very positive there in that group. So I think that, you know, I think you have to be careful. You have young players who you really want to matter and you want them to fix. And with a guy like Hartley or John Tortorella, those guys are good coaches, but we've talked about this with Tortorella. You have to make sure that you have the veterans who can kind of say, okay, we're going to be the buffers so that you get the really good about a Hartley or a Tortorella, but will help you handle when you have to learn the hard lessons and how that message is communicated.
Elliot, I'd be fine if the Sabres, right? not that my opinion matters, but everyone wants an opinion from everybody. So I'll give you my opinion. I would be fine and thrilled for Don Granato, but that's a good choice now. I mean, I agree with you.
I was going to say that. Why wouldn't you hire Don Granato now?
He's given no reason not to. Dan Girardi, Matt Ellis.
Yeah.
And Don Granato is, from what we all as Sabres fans and people that have covered the team, what we've watched from our young group, you have to be pleased with the way that they're playing. You have to be pleased with the structure in which they played defensively, which we haven't seen a good defensive team in years, but these guys are implementing things. Our younger guys, very important. Our younger guys are starting to flourish. Rasmus Dahlin, once Don Granato took over, completely came a different player. And others, Casey Mittelstadt has exploded. You know, Tage Thompson's playing well. Rasmus Asplund. You have an older, and you can't even call Sam Reinhart older. He's 25 years old. He's playing fantastic in a position that he hasn't played for 6 years as a centerman. He looks great. And they all look like they're having fun.
Well, that was the word I wanted to add. And I don't want to be the topper. Like, I hate when that happens. We used to call Derek Roy the topper. You'd say something really good, and then he would try to make it just a little bit better. You know what I mean? And he always call him the topper. And it's true. But you just said it, Riv. And the word that I'm thinking of is there's a togetherness there that I haven't seen in years, not just this year, but last year and the year before that and the year before that. I mean, the shootout that was going on with the shootout the other night with the guys on the bench. And it just seems like the entire group as a whole, it feels like maybe it's smaller and tighter than it's ever been. And I think Don Granato and Matt Ellis and Dan Girardi are the reason for that.
Absolutely.
So then you guys are there as opposed to me. Is there any reason that you guys know of organizationally why Don Granato would not want the job?
Are you asking that because you know a reason?
No, because I'm trying to figure out the process here. Like, I look at this, and one thing I will say this, Craig Simpson, who was a really good coach and a really good player, he always would say to me, I was always wary of teams that got really good once they were done. It was something that he often felt very difficult to measure, and it really would carry over. He wondered if it would really carry over into the next year. And I think that's a fair comment. I've always thought about that. But I'm looking at this Sabres situation right now, and I'm saying, you know, like, how could Granato not be the front runner for the job unless for whatever reason he doesn't want to do the job? And I got no reason to believe that. The other thing, too, is you're paying Kruger $3.75 million next year not to coach. And I'm not saying that Granato is cheap or anything like that. It's not what I'm trying to say here. But the number for him won't be as high as the number for, say, Tortorella.
Well, and not only that, too. There is a big list of very good candidates. But is there a right candidate right now? And I mean... And not knowing the direction of the team and what Kevin Adams wants to do after this season, Don Granato might be, I mean, what's the rush on trying to find the next coach? Like, you know what I mean? Like, why does it have to be like, I guess I know we've had a lot of coaches, but why can't Don Granato at least be here for a couple more years to see where it goes, or at least next year to see where it goes, if you can't find the right guy in the offseason?
I don't disagree with you. I don't. Like, plus, they know him. They know Granato now.
He's a coach. Mm-hmm. He's a coach. He's been a coach for a very, very long time. Not in the NHL. He's been assistants, but he's coached for a very long time. He understands the game. There's no question about it. There is clearly the communication that Don Granato and his two assistants are having, and Mike Bales, are having with the players right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't care that they're out and, oh, there's no pressure on them or anything. That's crap. They're playing better hockey. They're playing better offensively. They're playing better defensively. They've played damn near how many games they played this year without their number one goaltender. And let me tell you something right now, when Linus Allmark is in the net,
mm-hmm.
this team is a much better hockey team.
Mm-hmm.
He's played fantastic.
Yes. Played Eichel, very hard.
I mean, you have your a top 10 player in the world out of your lineup. Okay.
Who knows?
What Don Granato's done with this team and the confidence that they're having. They seem like they want to play for one another, that they want to be there. And you know what? I mean, there's no inkling that he should not be the head coach of this team.
Mm-hmm.
Elliot Friedman joining us here. A few more minutes with you, Elliot. Is there a story that you've enjoyed writing more than the Michael Hauser story in the last little while? I mean, what was the last story that you've written that made you feel that good writing it?
Probably not too many. And it was going to be the lead until Tom Wilson happened. And then that kind of took priority. But you know what? Like, you know, I think anybody out there who's a parent, and I said this to Bill and Monica Hauser, is that you have to understand, you can't understand what it means to a parent until you become a parent. Like, I have a 9-year-old son now, and what does every parent live for? You live to see your children reach their dreams. It's all you hope for, is that you set your son or daughter up for success, and that they are successful and happy, and you enjoy that happiness, right? And, you know, I'm really glad for the Hauser family that they got a chance to see that. Because, you know, Bill Hauser, the father, he said to me, we always believed it was going to happen. We just didn't know how long it would take. But there's no doubt that the doubt creeps in at some points, right? And that, for me, was the best part about writing that story and talking to the family guys, was that the parents and the brother, because his brother Alex was with them too, watching the game. You know, like they got a chance to live their dream. They got a chance to see their child fulfill his dream. And not only did he get to play, but he played well and they won. And then they won again. Like, I'm watching these highlights right here that you guys are showing up for the TV side of this. And it's awesome. Like, if you're a parent out there, you get what I'm saying. If you're not a parent out there and you're listening to this, you don't get what I'm saying, but hopefully you'll get the opportunity sometime to get what I'm saying, because it's pretty incredible to listen to the family talk about how proud they were, and their phones blew up, and all the messages they got. And the other thing too is, just, you know, the Bruins were fantastic. They let me, Jared Tenorti wasn't playing that night, but they let me talk to him in the second intermission. The Blue Jackets, Scott Harrington wasn't playing that night, but I spoke to him after the game. Like, these guys were watching their own games, but, you know, Scott Harrington said the perfect thing was, our game goes to overtime, and during the commercial break, I could quickly change to the Sabres game, and I got a chance to see the end of the game and Hauser win. Like, there were guys around hockey.
Like, you think, you know, he just said that. He watched Hauser.
Oh, yeah, I know. He was like, you're going to
get in trouble. He didn't watch his own team. Yeah. There's no way. He's like, here's what's going on in Columbus right now.
But it's amazing. Like, 13 guys from that team have now played in the NHL, that London Knights team, and they were all rooting for him. I thought it was an awesome story.
It's an unbelievable story. And you know what? It's amazing that you brought up the parent element to it, because I tried to think about that being my son, because, you know, we all have kids, right? So
yeah.
I tried to sit and think about everything that I was hoping for. I was hoping for as if it were my son in net, you know, yeah. Block that shot, get that out. How did you turn that over, Middlestad? What were you doing with that puck? And that really happened. I'm not just picking on him. but you know, like, I'm thinking about these things as the game is going on. And when Reinhardt bagged that empty netter, I still wasn't comfortable, but I was feeling really good. You know, it's an awesome story. And I know someone that knows he and his family, and they talked about was how wonderful the family is and how great of a guy he is.
You know,
so it just makes the story that much better. What's that?
That first game, Petey, we talked about it all morning. We were just saying, please give this young man just one start. Just please, with all he's gone through and and where he's come from and his journey. And
that was before I knew about the bilateral club feet. Like, we didn't, I didn't even, that was when it was just about the going through the ranks of hockey.
Yeah, I think it was, 14 or 11 by the 11 or 12 by the time he was two, and two more by the time he was 11.
Just wow, right?
I'll tell you guys a funny story. So someone I know is a bettor, and he heard that Hauser was playing against the Islanders, and he saw the over under was 5.5. So he went and he put a ton of money on the over. So the Islanders score those first two goals, and he calls me and he says, I don't want to win this bet. I can't watch this kid give up eight goals. Like, I don't want to win. And then, so when the Sabres started coming back, and he's like, oh my God, the Sabres might actually, now I need the, now he's cheering for Island. He calls me. He's like, I need the Islanders to pull their goalie so I can get the sixth goal. So he didn't want to win the bet, but then when the Sabres were winning the game, he was screaming for the Sabres to win the game. When the puck went in the empty net, he was so happy. Was like,
yeah, sure. It worked in his favor.
Hauser won the game.
Yeah, it worked in his favor. He's basically, he's basically the Russian crowd changing and cheering for Rocky.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
And that's exactly what happens there.
But he felt a twang of conscience there for a
couple. He deserved to lose his shirt that night, Elliot. You know what's funny? It's funny because, and I would rather talk about, you know, being wrong than saying I told you so. I really would. I don't like saying I told you so, because I find it's more fun when I'm wrong. I can have more fun with it because I'm just a born loser, so I accept it. So I'm joking. It's a joke. So I said to somebody in a message, they were messaging about, oh my God, I want to put so much money on the money line because, you know, this guy's going to let in six or seven goals. And I just said, you know what? Shame on you. I said, like, screw you is basically, I said, you go do that. And I hope it completely blows up in your face, but
I'll tell you this though.
End of the day,
if you know, talking about gambling and betting on these games. And when you think about it, you know, everybody, and I mean everybody, put money for the Islanders to win.
Everybody.
So they go and lose the first game. And that's okay. Sometimes you have upsets. It's not a big deal. How many?
You think they chased it, Riv? You think they chased it?
Are you serious?
There's no way the Islanders are going to let that happen again. There's no way.
Exactly what's going on. And you are triple, double daring down on your bet, because there's no way the Islanders are losing two in a row.
I will say this. I know someone who knows Hauser who bet the Sabres again the second night. Said to me, the kid's going to do it again.
Loyalty.
Yeah.
Loyalty. You know,
and
what?
And I believe they doubled down in the shootout, because they told me that in the shootout, I think he lost one game in 3 years in the OHL.
Interesting.
I'm shocked.
Interesting, Elliot. Well, thanks for forwarding that information over to us in advance. Last thing I want to ask you. Buchnevich.
Yeah.
What's he going to get?
I think, like, the Rangers have two games.
$5,000 fine.
No, he's not getting a $5,000.
What?
I think they've got two games left. I wouldn't be surprised if he gets them. I don't know that. It's just a guess.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks for your time today.
Fair.
Look, like, I understand. Two games. I had a lot of people who say to me, saying to, or tweeting last night, that, oh, the Wilson didn't get anything, so Buchnevich doesn't get anything either.
No, it's not the
it way doesn't that. Work that way. It doesn't work that way.
Two games, I'm good with that.
Yeah. Well, again, it could have all been avoided. Could have all been avoided, Elliot.
Yes, it could have.
Thank you for your time today. Appreciate you making the time to come back on.
Before we go, like,
yeah.
Like, you guys played in an era where that happened a lot more often. Last night, do you think that's a good or bad thing for the NHL, those highlights?
I think it's amazing. Absolutely off the chart amazing. For the NHL, I think it's not bad press. Everybody talks about code and this and that. It's not about code. It's about these players play with, they're tight hockey players. When you got tight teams and you, it's, this is about the love for your brother, man. And I loved seeing it last night. It was really exciting. And guess what? Everything's moved on. Everybody's going to move on from it.
Would you repeat the question?
Do you think that was good or bad for the NHL last night? I've gotten some mixed emotions.
Well, this is where my confusion lies, Elliot, is that it's amazing for the NHL. I mean, what are we talking about? It's absolutely amazing for the NHL because everybody, I know people that don't watch hockey that tuned in for that game last night. I tuned into that game last night. Very rarely do I sit down on time for a puck drop for a team that's not the Sabres. Okay. Like, so I think it's great for the NHL. I'm just confused about, is that what they want? Right?
Like, I think you can live with it once. I don't think you want that all the time.
Well, how many times does this happen a year?
Well, that's my point. Like,
it happens like maybe once, maybe twice.
There's a lot of reaction to it because it happened and we don't see it that much anymore. I the fact that it happened once, it doesn't make me too crazy, but I think if it happened four times a week, people are saying that this is the reason that people don't watch hockey in the United States. I don't agree with that. I think the reason that we don't have as much of an audience.
But people are lining up to watch a bloodbath UFC fight. What are you talking about? Right. That's just dumbest.
Right. I think the problem is we don't market our people well enough. I think that's a bigger issue than the fighting.
Well, let me ask, did you have an initial thought when you saw it going on? I thought, oh my God, I can't believe it's actually happening. I didn't expect it. But then did you have another thought? I had another thought. I'm just thinking, like, it's kind of embarrassing. It's kind of embarrassing. You got grown men fighting. I mean, and I know what I did for a living, okay? But you got to remember,
I don't even know what you're talking about.
I'm sitting there and I'm just going, like, what's going on here? These are grown men fighting right now. and I remember what I was doing. I just, because I'm so embarrassed about what I did. Like, I'm so embarrassed. Like, it's just embarrassing.
Why are you embarrassed? It's not embarrassing about it.
Oh, man. I'm a tough guy in the NHL.
How many games did you play?
220. This isn't a sofa session, is it? No, I'm fine. Elliot, I'm fine. I promise.
You would have given a limb to play that many games in the NHL. You have nothing to apologize.
And I'd give a limb to go back.
I know.
I'd not go back to the game, go back before and change my mind.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I have a great story. I always wanted a Dodge Viper when I was a kid. And I think now when I look back, I'm like, cause I remember certain moments and I think, you would know, Elliot, you're like a genius. Is this like what is this called? When you see something is like before it's like I can't think, hold on. So I'm driving, my dad's taking me to the OHL, my first training camp in the OHL. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I had no idea what I was getting myself into. My brother had been in the OHL. I knew I was going to have to fight. I knew all this stuff. I was really just trying to go to the OHL because I thought that was a cool thing to do. That's the only reason why I was playing hockey, because I thought it was what everybody did. So I'm going to the OHL, and on the side of the highway, I'll never forget this, there's a Dodge Viper broken down on my way to Oshawa, like broken down on the side of the road. And I'm thinking to myself, is this like foreshadowing? That's what I'm thinking. Like, so here I am, like, maybe I should, because that whole trip, and my dad doesn't know this, that whole trip, I just wanted to tell my dad to go home. I don't want to go. Mm-hmm. I was like, Dad, I don't want to go. I don't want to go play in the OHL. This is not what I want to do. Mm-hmm. I'm not ready. I don't want to do this. But I couldn't. I was so far into it that I got stuck. So here I am talking to you. But it's great. I love it. I love my Thursdays.
We all have our junior stories, eh?
I bet you do.
I had the exact same story, a little bit different, and I'll do it in 30 seconds.
Okay.
I pulled up with my father in Kingston. We got out of the old Volvo GLE, mm-hmm. and opened the trunk. I'm standing there with my father. I'm getting my bag out and my two sticks, and two guys were walking towards the track to do their training. Their run. And I saw a guy that was so jacked on steroids at the age of 19. It was completely off the chart. This guy had, he looked exactly like Ivan Drago. Like, I mean, six pack, chest popping out. He had to be 220, 6'4". And I looked at my dad. I was 6'1", 167 pounds. I looked at my dad and he looked at me and I could tell my dad was like, oh my Lord. My dad was like worried for me. And I just looked at my dad and I was thinking in my head, let's just get in the car and go home. This is not for me. Right. But you know what? Got back on the ice, and it's amazing what happens when you're scared, and you're just a lot faster when you're scared.
We got to get all over our fears, eh? That's true.
That's it. Anyway, survived.
Yeah. Yeah. Here we are. We did.
Here we are.
You guys did it.
Hey, it's like, look at us
next
now.
Next show, next Thursday, Petey, we're going to be both laying on a couch. And we're just going to go through therapy, okay? Let's get this out.
Dr. Friedman, thank you for your time today.
No worries.
I do feel cleansed. I feel cleansed telling that story, Elliot.
That's what I'm here for.
Awesome. Well, thanks for your time. We're way past break. Elliot Friedman every Thursday at 11 o'clock. And we'll be back. A couple segments left here. Sabres tonight, 7 o'clock puck drop. Stick around, Motor Talk.